Hi, folks. Before we get started, we'd like to take a moment to let you know some of the content on this podcast may not be suitable for some audiences. It's all in good fun, but we just wanted to let you know. So enjoy, have a great time, and on with the show.
Yo, yo, yo! JFDN Podcast 2014 in the house! Let's light it up! Yeah!
Brilliant.
I feel like that, when we do our podcast tour, that would be an amazing way to kick off the show.
It was good times.
That was wicked.
Welcome to the Jan Dan Podcast, episode 44, brought to you by our friends at DraftKings, calling all puckheads. DraftKings inviting you to play some one-day fantasy hockey for cash. Every day they run a contest called The Sniper, has thousands of dollars in cash prizes. Sniper's $2 entry free. Hey, $2! So DraftKings.com.
Don't forget about the promo code.
JDP, promo code.
That's so important. When you're going to DraftKings.com, put that promo code in, JDP. It's very important.
Question, has anyone made any phone calls, sent any emails about the podcast tour?
For the new year, we're going to do it.
Yeah, we got lots of time to get on that.
The budget's being worked out.
Yeah. The budget's being...
Yeah.
No one's done anything.
There's no budget.
No one has done a thing.
Well, I kind of know where we want to go, though. The dude's house in Montreal who said he'd put us all up.
Yep.
And then the dude's house in Brandon, Manitoba who said he'd put us all up. Really, it's a matter of whoever will put us up. That's where we'll go.
Yeah.
Big City Ken, we'll go stay with him.
Welcome to the hiccups.
We'll be hitting Peterborough on this tour that may or may not happen.
If Big City Ken doesn't appear on the live edition of the Jane Dan podcast, I think it's going to be pretty disappointing for a lot of people, including myself.
I came from the big city.
He's got to be there. Toolsy, that's your job.
To find Big City
Kids. Yeah.
I think we found him, but it's just getting him out from under.
Hey, our guest today is TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie.
Oh, boy, I can't wait for this.
We have been trying to get Bob on for a little while. He's very busy, very busy.
I asked him on Twitter. He didn't respond to me.
We'll talk about the fact that he openly dislikes you now.
Yeah.
Bob has a new book out called Hockey Confidential, Inside Stories from People Inside the Game. And
just in time for Christmas.
Just in time for the holiday season. If you're looking for something to buy your hockey-loving friend or relative, that would be the thing to buy. So and we'll talk to Bob in just a little bit. And on the Canadian Wall of Fame today, Joni Mitchell.
Joni Mitchell.
Joni Mitchell never lied.
She's seeing things from both sides now.
Oh, there's Ryan Brumley with some Halloween candy.
I wanted him to bring this down because this is our post-Halloween show. And my 3-year-old daughter, Ruby, we said, if you give us all your candy that's remaining, you can get a toy at the toy store. So here's your candy. You guys can pick out on the candy.
So you stole candy from a baby, literally.
Nope. She said she wanted the toy instead of the candy.
Couldn't you have just bought her a toy and let her continue to eat her candy?
Hell no.
Wow.
Dentists are expensive.
Wow. Let's see what you got here. Some Reese's Pieces.
Here's the thing. So my sister and my niece were in town. They went trick-or-treating with us. They are not fans of the American chocolate. They said it was too chalky.
I have heard that. I have heard that about the American chocolate. I don't really notice the difference. In fact, here's a Kit Kat, a
bar that's extremely popular in Canada. Let's try this one for a taste test.
There was only one full chocolate bar house that we went to, and he had Snickers or full bags of M&Ms.
And you said this was a single man who was dressed up.
He was not in lounging clothes. He was in I'm going to pick up someone's mom clothes.
Or someone's child.
I think the mom, probably.
It's a little creepy, don't you think?
You're sure a cute kid.
And the other thing I found out about the States, because this is my first time trick-or-treating here, booze everywhere.
You said everyone in your neighborhood was loaded.
They were just all walking around with, like, the parents were singing. And
that's how it should be. That's great.
Yeah.
Makes it fun.
I wanted to give out shots of booze to the parents that came to the door,
yeah.
But my wife said no.
What? Were other houses doing that you
no.
went to visit? Oh, that's too bad. I was thinking maybe that would have happened.
And our neighbor said, we got back, and the neighbor said to my wife after, she said, yeah, all the parents are drinking. The neighbor says, it's a Friday. What else are you going to do?
Yeah. What else are you going to do? As a parent, you're stuck at home. You might as well get obliterated, right?
Yeah. They could use some more lighting on the streets.
Any slutty Halloween costumes from, parents or anything?
I'm glad you brought that up, because these two ladies were walking these two kids, and the mom was dressed up as a slutty police officer.
I love it. Any slutty Ebola nurses?
No.
What about, here's the ultimate, this will end all slutty costumes, and I'm going to try to convince my wife to go as this slutty costume next year. I want her to go as slutty Anne Frank. And so slutty Anne Frank, she's got her diary in her hand, and then I'll go as the who captures her.
Oh my God.
And then I'll have handcuffs, and we'll be handcuffed together, and I'll be taken around. I'll be like, yeah, this is Anne Frank. I just found her, trying to hide out again, but I'm taking her away. What do you think of that?
Too bad you couldn't hear that part of the podcast that we had to edit.
And we're back.
Slutty Anne Frank. It's going to be the hottest costume of Halloween 2015. Mark my words, everybody. So get on board now.
I don't think. Hey, by the way, if you listened to last week's Halloween podcast, you probably heard a lot of edits.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
All those spooky witch noises.
Oh, witch noises. Yeah.
They're natural.
Nothing wrong with that. Hey, so Joni Mitchell.
Joni Mitchell.
Very cool. I mean, Jim, what can you say? What are your thoughts on Joni? Like I don't listen to much Joni Mitchell.
Me
I'll
neither.
Be perfectly honest.
I couldn't name a Joni Mitchell song.
I don't either.
Both sides now.
Put up a parking lot.
Yeah.
Part of the Laurel Canyon sound right there.
Right. Right. Yeah. So she's perfect to have on because she is so L.A., Laurel Canyon, but obviously from Canada.
Yeah.
She was in that band, the documentary, too. Wasn't she? She appeared on stage with them?
In the last waltz?
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
And, you know, she was real tight, obviously, with Graham Nash. They were together for a while.
Right. The song Our House is about her and Graham
about
Nash.
Her and Graham. Yeah.
And she was on that train trip with Janis Joplin and all those guys, too.
Right. There's another documentary about a cross Canada train trip.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was on that. So, anyway, there is Joni Mitchell. I think she's from Saskatoon, maybe?
I'll get that for you.
I think she might have been born in Rocky Mountain House,
Alberta. Could we get an older computer? This one holds a charge.
Honestly,
for
this
seven
is embarrassing.
Minutes.
Speaking of that, nice old BlackBerry you have there. It's I understand you had a little mishap.
Fort McLeod, Alberta. We've
born
been
in Fort
there.
McLeod. Colin from Fort McLeod. Hopefully, no one gets that reference.
And I think the stuff she does now is even it's more kind of almost bordering on jazz.
Jazz, yeah. right. Yeah. Kind of in the 80s or something. She got into that, right?
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah,
like that?
Exactly. Yeah,
that's such a good point.
I got a haircut in Fort McLeod.
Upright bass, you know, really
right?
Cool stuff. Yeah,
she played didn't she play sort of a interesting guitar style where she sort of picked at it.
Finger picking.
Yeah. There you go. So we know more about Joni than we thought we did.
Good old finger picker.
Oh, picking those fingers.
I had to return to my old BlackBerry because, as I mentioned, my sister and my niece are in town. So my sister, she wanted to go out. So I took her out to the South Bay, Hermosa Beach and Redondo. And it was a very calm night. She doesn't drink, so we just went out for a couple of snacks and then made our way home, reached into my sweater. It's sweater season here in L.A. So the first time wearing a sweater for the season, I reach in, grab my wallet, pay the cab, I get out. My phone's gone. Mm-hmm. So I eventually tracked the cab driver down. I approach his vehicle, knock on the window where he was sitting at the taxi stand, and I said, pretty sure my phone's in your car. He goes, no, no phone here. I said, no, my phone fell out of my pocket. No, no phone. He goes, it was in your hand. I'm like, how would the cab driver? I said, can I take a look? Yeah, a lot of people in this cab, so no, it's not here. So he knew that phone was there, but it's worthless. It was a BlackBerry.
Yeah, that's my big hole in your story. You seem to be implying that this man stole your phone, but
I think
there's no reason he would ever want that.
I'm convinced that they have cab drivers, because it happens probably 10 times a night.
Oh, they.
A phone
that's
is left in their car.
That's how you refer to them.
Well, the cab driver industry.
Sure, sure. Yeah, go on.
They have a go-to when they find a phone. They make a call, say, okay, yeah, we'll give you $50 for that phone. They, boom.
Who are these people? Who is, like, who is this?
There's an underground cell phone ring.
Phone thieves.
I called it a million times. They never answered it. A good Samaritan would have answered it and said, yeah, I got your phone. Instead, someone has to be a complete f***ing ass and take my
phone.
Isn't
it possible that it could have just fallen out and just literally be in a gutter somewhere?
No, because I had called my sister because she was running up the street, and then we picked her up. I said, okay, yeah, here's the cab, and then they drove us home. So I never exited the cab without the cell phone. So it was in my hand 2 minutes before he dropped us off.
All right. Well, important thing is you got – wow, why are you so upset about that? You're going to get a new BlackBerry. I understand you contacted the BlackBerry
people. They haven't
contacted
me back.
Ooh, they're mad because you made fun of their phone.
No, I'm glad I'm back to the old BlackBerry, the old Bold, the Curve, because it's so tiny. It's like it's a pack of cards. It's smaller than a deck of cards.
Why don't you just get an iPhone?
I don't know how it's affecting your life.
Well, it's just this thing. Because how it affects my life is I say, hey, I'm going to send you this video, and you're like, I can't watch that. That's how it affects my life.
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of people, Toolsy, upset about the cancellation of long-running sitcom Email Chain Theater.
Didn't it last three episodes?
A lot of people.
Check your inbox.
People were upset.
And then there should be an explosion at the end of that because it's gone.
Well, here it is, at Jeremy88Miller. I'm going to miss Email Chain Theater, hashtag ECT. At Wiggle Chicken. Sad that Email Chain Theater is going away, boys. Easily my favorite segment of the show. At EIRDIRSCEOL, the news of Email Chain Theater's cancellation distresses me. Several tweets like this. But the good news, folks, is that our friend Pat Muldowney got in a serious Twitter war with awful announcing writer and television critic Steve Lepore about Prince this week. So we've decided to introduce a brand new and exciting segment to the podcast called Twitter War Theater.
Twitter War Theater. Take no prisoners.
Yeah.
Ryan nice. Brumley getting a lot of voiceover work.
So Ryan Brumley is one of our production assistants. I understand that when he was voicing over that particular piece of work there, that he dropped a big bad fart in
his brains out.
Yeah.
Just ripped
so
it.
So he just went in there and like just
went in there to check on him, and I was like, oh, God.
Just
man.
Foul. Yeah.
He did it in the most enclosed space in the entire building.
But I think that's better because you contain it away from potentially running
until other
humans.
People go in there.
But why would you go in there?
I had to get this microphone out of there. It was brutal. In my headphones.
Oh.
Okay. All right. I stand corrected.
That's where, remember back in the day, we did the first like three podcasts from in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Okay. So we're going to, here we go. So obviously, Pat, I don't know, does Pat have his own script? Yeah. So Pat will be Pat. And I think Dan should be Steve Lepore.
No.
Steve Lepore.
I wouldn't have been a part of any Email Chain Theater because I didn't have a phone for 5 days. And again, it's very liberating experience if you don't have a phone.
Okay, so here we go. Twitter War Theater, and it starts with Pat.
This was all really just a misunderstanding.
It's all Twitter.
I said Prince is an artist that the internet decided you're not allowed to not like.
And then Steve Lepore said, my entire timeline is people praising Prince.
Kind of my point.
And then Lepore... He sells out shows in 5 minutes whenever he announces them. There's literally no one talking about hating Prince ever.
I said, so does One Direction.
I have no idea what your point is. No, but he hates Prince. Even his new stuff gets good reviews.
And I said, I don't like Prince. I'm sure there are others.
Oh, see? I read this wrong from the start. I read.
Yes, that's how it feels.
I thought you said the internet says you're not allowed to like Prince. Then you're just a very, very silly person.
I said, there it is.
I mean, enjoy whatever floats your boat, but you're missing out on some of the best songs of the 80s.
So to be honest, it's 2014. I'm not really missing out on anything from the 80s.
But you put in TBH. I've never seen that in my life.
What is TBH?
To be honest.
To be honest. Right.
Does it really waste that much time writing to be honest?
It's characters. Characters.
There's some great music being made in 2014. Yeah, that's great. You can like stuff from every era. Okay, what do you like?
Twitter War Theater.
Yes.
Take
unbelievable.
Awesome.
Wow. Toolsy's performance, that's Emmy-worthy right there.
Thank you. So did you guys resolve anything?
It was just a misunderstanding.
I don't know. You guys have had a few tete-a-tetes on Twitter.
No, we're good. I like Steve. Steve's a good buddy.
Hey, by the way.
Oh, let's hear it. Oh, the haircut?
I was watching the Four Letter Network the other day.
Yeah.
Muldowney in a commercial.
What? What commercial?
With Rajon Rondo.
With Rajon Rondo? Where? What?
I had a speaking line in that one.
You did. You said, all right, that's the lineup or something, or that's what we're going with?
No, I said, but there is a chance we'll go on late.
Yeah.
It's like a Sports Center meeting.
It's just, oh. And then.
So. It was all Rondo has huge hands.
Do you get appearance fees for that?
Royalty checks?
So I shot that probably about a week before I came out to L.A. on vacation 2 years ago. And I spoke to a friend of mine who works. He's an actor. And he was like, it's absurd that they have employees do that and you don't get paid because it just they air forever. And
It is absurd.
But,
sure. But we do the same thing at Fox, don't we?
I don't know. I don't know if people are in the commercials. Well, I was in that Sarah, a girl that works on the digital side. Her and I were extras in that first commercial you guys shot, the one that was going to be the launch commercial, and then it was the Super Bowl commercial.
Oh, you mean the one where in the golf cart?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was a mistake. What the hell happened with that? We shot that like 2 days before we launched. It didn't make the light of day. The director got fired halfway through the shoot, it seemed. And then it didn't appear again until the Super Bowl. It was incredible.
That was the one where you ate 87 shrimp.
Oh, that was
I ate 50
so
shrimp
bad.
At 6 a.m.
Every single time.
Yeah, I ate a freshly frozen from the shrimp ring in the frozen food section.
Everybody was concerned. They're like, you don't actually have to eat it.
But yeah. I was like, I'm a method actor. Like, I commit to the role.
We've got our guest on the line now, the voice of hockey in North America, our good friend, well, Jay's good friend, and the man I'd love to be good friends with, Bob McKenzie. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing, my friend?
Very well, boys. How are you guys doing?
Oh, life couldn't be better, Bob. We're both in
whatever
shorts.
Happened? You guys left Canada and no one's ever heard of you ever since then. did you guys find jobs or what are you doing now?
I don't know if you'd call what we do jobs, but then it wasn't any different when we were working for TSN. Nobody accused us of working that hard there either.
Good point by you, Gord.
Bob's new book is Hockey Confidential Inside Stories from People Inside the Game. Bob, you're sitting in an empty rink on the cover of the book. What arena is that?
That would be Maple Leaf Gardens.
Really?
Actually, it's no longer called Maple Leaf Gardens. It's called the Mattamy Center. And they've done, it's actually a really cool development. They were able to keep Maple Leaf Gardens, the outside of the structure, absolutely intact. And what they effectively did was they cut it in half, but horizontally.
Right.
So what they've done is they built a rink at what would be the halfway up, and they made the bottom floor what used to be the ice surface and the gold seats and the red seats, and they've turned that into a grocery store, a liquor store, and a bunch of other things. But the top half of the building, right up including the legitimate the original rafters and everything else, is now a hockey rink and athletic facility for Ryerson University. So it's actually a very cool setup, and you can still see the structure intact in terms of the rafters of Maple Leaf Gardens, and it's obviously, you know, looks new and what have you with the arena, but it's still pretty cool that they're able to preserve the outside of the building intact because it's wonderful architecture, and they were able to, you know, maintain the integrity of the inside a little bit by having a rink there.
As far as the old rinks go, Bob, what was your favorite to go to?
Montreal Forum. Yeah. Case closed. I mean, the moment you walked into the Montreal Forum, It was like going into a shrine.
Yeah.
And that comes from a guy who was born and raised in Toronto and in the 1960s grew up a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. But there was always, for me, there was something special about the ghost of the Montreal Forum. And that, but all the original six buildings were great. And, I mean, I didn't get a chance to go into the Olympia, but I most certainly was in the Chicago Stadium. Madison Square Garden has always, for me, been the one that they're in now, although you'd never recognize it because they did a renovation that cost more than most what rinks cost to be built. But I was never in the old Madison Square Garden. But Chicago Stadium was wonderful. The Boston Garden was wonderful. Maple Leaf Gardens was wonderful. And the Montreal Forum was the most special of all.
Well, Bob, you're getting a lot of attention for this book. Obviously, you've got great stories. And one of the stories that you actually posted on TSN.ca, or at least an excerpt, was about how Corsi actually got its name. New advanced stats are coming out. First of all, what are your thoughts on all these advanced stats now? Do you enjoy that kind of stuff like the young guys seem to do? And what's sort of been the reaction to this, the real story about how Corsi got its name?
Well, as far as the advanced stats go, or as I like to call them, fancy stats, I'm not mathematically inclined. That's not my nature. I was always a written word, spoken word guy, and I'm not very good at trying to process numbers. But having said that, I can certainly see the value in a lot of what they talk about, and I try to embrace it a little bit to at least understand it. I guess sometimes I'm watching a game and I just want to watch the game. I don't want to know who's driving the play and who's had been on the ice for the most shot attempts and whose Corsi sucks and whose Corsi's great, or and contemplate that Fenwick is Corsi without the block shots and all that stuff. But there, I can certainly see it's a big league and you can't watch all the games. And you can absolutely draw some or infer some conclusions from things like Corsi and Fenwick and PDO and some of the other advanced stats. Now, there's some level of it gets to where I'm just like completely lost and I'm like, okay, you may well be telling the truth about the value of some of these things, but I'm just too dumb to understand it. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to open up another, have another rum and coke and call it a night. But the Corsi story was really funny because everybody thought they knew how Corsi got its name. And Jim Corsi was a goalie coach for the Buffalo Sabres. And legend has it that this mythical, legendary Edmonton-based blogger who had a website named Vic Ferrari, who named himself after Latka Gravis's alter ego in the Andy Kaufman, of course, in Taxi, that this blogger in Edmonton named Vic Ferrari was listening to Jim Corsi talk about the concept of shot attempts for measuring a goalie's workload and measuring puck possession. And then he took it to the next level, formulated the methodology that we now know to be Corsi, and named it after the guy who inspired it by the radio interview he did. Well, I got hold of Vic Ferrari last spring, and nobody had ever really spoken to him about it. And he says, well, actually, I lied about that. I didn't actually hear Jim Corsi on the radio. It was Darcy Regier, the general manager of the Buffalo Sabres, and I actually wanted to call it the Regier number, but that didn't sound very good. So then I thought I'll call it the Ruff number in honor of Lindy Ruff, the Buffalo Sabre coach, because Buffalo's talking about doing this, and that didn't sound good. So I just went to their website, and I looked on it, and there was a great picture of a goalie coach named Jim Corsi. And I looked at the name, and I looked at the picture, and he had a great mustache. And that's why I picked Corsi as the name for it. Now, what Vic Ferrari didn't know, and his name's actually Tim Burns, and he just got hired as the statistics consultant for the Washington Capitals, believe it or not. But what he did not know until I told him was that Jim Corsi actually did believe in shot attempts. The Jim Corsi was the reason that Darcy Regier was talking about this concept on the radio in the first place. So it turned out to be the absolutely most fortuitously named for a mustache, but really a lot more to it than that. So it's a pretty hilarious read.
That is unreal. Who else? What other kind of stories? Because did you just pick the brains of people that have been around the game forever for this book?
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. My job is all-encompassing every day, 24/7, breaking news, trying to stay on top of things. If I was going to write a book on it, I didn't just want it to be about, well, why did this general manager trade that player, or why did this team draft this guy, or who doesn't like who in hockey, or whatever. I wanted to try and get some long-form storytelling, which I don't get a chance to do because I'm on Twitter, talking 30, 40 seconds at a time on TSN. I wanted to kind of get back to my roots of writing and doing some stories of 5, 10, 15,000 words, really compelling life stories of people in the game of hockey, but with a real strong hockey angle. So that's kind of what I set out to do. So I sat down with Brandon Prust, the Montreal Canadian tough guy, and really got to talk to him about what it's really like to fight super heavyweights. The guy's just barely 6 feet, 195 pounds, and he's fighting guys 6'5" and 6'6", 250, 260 pounds. What's it really like to take your life in your hands to fight those guys? And what's it really like to put up with the pain and the physical toll that the NHL takes on you? And I just found it to be a phenomenal story that he told, and how you battle the demons that so often go with that job. So that was one story. I mean, there are so many. The Subban family, they come from Jamaica, and land in Sudbury, and Carl Subban, who's PK's father, puts three boys in the National Hockey League, but he doesn't want that to be his legacy. He wants teaching inner-city kids in high-risk neighborhoods how to learn at school. He was a principal in the Jane Finch area in Toronto, and he wants that to be his legacy. He wants to write books about that, not that he put three kids in the National Hockey League. So I tried to find a few things that were maybe the path less traveled, but to make sure that there's lots of really hardcore hockey stuff in there, but also a lot of stuff about life and death and sort of the epic journey that everybody goes on.
Bob, do you have a favorite? I've always wanted to ask you this. Do you have a favorite scoop in your career? Like, do you have a favorite trade that you broke or someone got fired? Is there something that to you, you know, you think back, you're like, ah, that was, I'm the best for nailing that?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think. You know, one of the ones that probably I was most proud of, and it didn't get the recognition I thought that it should have, and that was including from my own paper at the time. I was working as the hockey columnist for the Toronto Star. Gil Stein was, for a brief period of time, the NHL president after John Ziegler, before Gary Bettman. And Gil Stein, while he was sitting in office in the National Hockey League, did some stuff where he was trying to orchestrate. He was basically rejigging the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee and restocking it with people he knew very well. And it was really at an attempt, as I saw it and as a lot of people saw it, to orchestrate his own induction into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Wow. And there were people that resigned from the Hall of Fame over this, and the story hadn't been told. Nobody really knew what was going on. And I broke that story, and it really didn't initially get a lot of attention, but then it obviously did, and it snowballed, and you know, that was the end of that. And so that was like really a big story at the time that didn't immediately get the attention that it deserved, but picked up steam and did. Probably that one would be the one that comes to mind.
So, Bob, no hockey rights. You've got regional rights on TSN this year. How are things going for those of us that have been outside of the country?
It's all good. I mean, hey, listen, who's kidding who when you lose national rights? There's a certain amount of prestige or exposure that goes with that. But you guys know TSN well enough to know that with people like James Duffy and myself and Darren Dreger and Pierre LeBrun and Aaron Ward and Jeff O'Neill and
you probably shouldn't have included Aaron Ward there, Bob.
I try to be inclusive.
I know.
and I'm not into bullying, so. But, you know, that's a lot of really good people. And So we're still striving in every way on TSN.ca and on SportsCenter and on That's Hockey and on all the games that we do. Still very much striving to be the source for everything hockey. And I think we still do a real good job of that. But that's up to the readers and the viewers to determine. But I think we're going to be just fine.
Bob, here's something I noticed. I was watching the Leaf game the other night on the center ice package, and the rink boards were all, so everyone had their company logo and their company designs, but the rink boards were all the same color. So no, if you were Esso, you couldn't have your blue lettering. If you're Tim Hortons, you couldn't have your red lettering. It was all kind of a grayish letter, so nothing stood out. Is that going to be like that all season? Was I missing something? What was it? Did you see that?
One of two things. It could be two of three things. number one, your TV might have been on the screen.
He's still...
Number two, you may just be colorblind.
Okay.
And number three, I'm not really sure, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was a new initiative because...
I did not see that.
Okay. I'll look into that.
Bob, before we let you go, chances of Dan, before you sell the place, getting an invite up to the famous Mackenzie Cottage?
Oh, boy, I don't know. I just don't feel like I should. I hate to, you know, to change my mind in midstream, and we've kind of had the Dan boycott of the cottage. And we'd lose some really good shtick if he ever came up there.
That's true.
It's not too far from his hometown of Peterborough, which kind of makes it all the better that, you know, he's so close yet so far.
The funniest thing, Bob, and this is serious, Dan hates cottages. Like, Dan, and maybe it's because he grew up in cottage country and he doesn't appreciate it as much as I do, but he hates the lakes. He hates the what he describes as the hand-me-down furniture.
Yep. I hate the silence.
You're the only person I've known who hates cottages.
Hate the smell of them?
God.
Well, there's two things you should know. Number one is... You know, I mean, I'm not going to tell people at home. I don't think any Canadians would listen to this podcast, but it's pretty obvious to me Dan O'Toole hates Canada.
Whoa! Whoa!
Yeah, I agree,
that's
Bob.
Number one. Yeah. If you hate cottages, you hate Canada.
That's right.
That's
number
one. Yeah. Number two, Dan, you'd be happy to know, and this is going to bother you even more now that you're not getting invited, is my cottage isn't really a cottage. It's a really nice house.
See?
I knew it.
Crap.
I knew it.
No handmade, no... Mrs. McKenzie, no hand-me-down furniture, all designer stuff.
it sounds beautiful.
Guess who? Don't give me no hand-me-down. Nope.
Bob.
Listen, if you hate Canada, you can't sing the Guess Who.
That's a great point, too,
Hey,
Bob.
I love Canada. Come on now.
It's called Hockey Confidential, Inside Stories from People Inside the Game by Bob McKenzie.
I wanted to get Bob, just before you left, biggest surprise right now, is there one surprise team in the NHL or one surprise player that is standing out to you?
Well, I think the Nashville Predators are off to an incredible start, and I thought they'd be improved under Peter Laviolette, but I didn't think they'd be quite as good as they are. And you know what? I mean, the Calgary Flames have been terrific in the early going. So good on Bob Hartley because that team plays hard, and, you know, they're starting to skill it up a little bit. That Johnny Goodrow, he's got that special something, and he's generating some skill that they didn't previously have. So Calgary and Nashville are two teams that really sort of jump out at me for positive surprises in the early going.
And who goes first overall, McDavid or Eichel?
I think it'll be McDavid. It's just incredible what he's doing so far. You know, 42 points in 14 games for the Erie Otters.
Oh my God.
Jack Eichel's got 9 points in 5 games for Boston University, and those are huge numbers in college hockey, playing against older kids, and he's been remarkable in the early going. So it's going to be a great draft year. It's going to be lots of fun.
Can't wait. Bob, thank you so much for joining us. We miss you a lot. And check out the book, Hockey Confidential, Inside Stories from People Inside the Game. Bob, thanks very much. Have a good holiday season.
Thanks a lot, boys. All the best, Jay. All the best, Dan.
Thanks, Bob. That's Bob McKenzie. And speaking of the Hall of Fame, Bob, when his career's over, he will be in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a lock. It'll be a first ballot Hall of Fame.
We know a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it's exciting. We'll never get in.
No, not a chance.
No, we got
Bob McKenzie. What a
Love
guy.
Love Bobby Mack.
So Bob's doing stuff for NBC as well.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And TSN.
That's right.
And is TSN going to have the draft?
No, but the other guys have the draft. But something that's different this year, and this won't be of any interest to Canadian viewers, or maybe it will, or listeners, but... NBC is producing their own draft, NHL draft coverage this year, and Bob, Darren Dreger, a bunch of TSN guys, I assume Gord Miller will be involved in it, and they've never done that before. They've always just picked up, usually NBC would just pick up TSN's feed,
right.
But they like those TSN guys, so they're going to do their own. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure the Sportsnet guys aren't thrilled about that, but I think they're all right.
So, yeah, pick up Bobby's book. I don't think it'll fit in a stocking. Depends on the size of your stocking.
Pick it up, wrap it up, put it under your tree. To me, that's what I always said about my book. The hardest people in your life to buy for, I feel like, are, you know, like your dad, your uncle, your brother. Those people are going to love Bobby's book. I mean, just grab it and you're done.
I don't get presents from his siblings.
You don't get presents from any of your siblings?
No, we just get all the kids' presents.
Okay. Yeah, that's, well, as you get older, yeah.
Yeah, screw them.
It's kind of like pointless at that point, right? Hey, here's something interesting. So... you guys may remember this. I know
Pete Schrager talked about this, Olive Garden, $100. They sold these $100 cards. For $100, you got the right to consume all the pasta, salad, bread, and Coca-Cola branded soft drinks that you could eat for 7 weeks. There was 1,000 never-ending pasta passes. They sold out within 45 minutes. Okay. Now, recently, a TV station did a story about one of the guys who bought one of these pasta passes. Because you say to yourself, I wonder how many times these people would actually go back to Olive Garden and eat Olive Garden pasta. And someone did this story.
Well, you may remember we told you about a guy here in the Triad who said he was going to eat Olive Garden twice a day, every day for 7 weeks. Alan Martin's mission certainly got a lot of you talking on Facebook and Twitter. Fox 8's Stephanie Ondo decided to check back in with him
now
that
he's thunderstorm
just
going
1 week
while this
away
report is
from
happening.
His big goal.
At the Olive Garden in Burlington.
Do you want cheese on this as well?
Please.
All right.
Alan Martin says the wait staff treats him like a celebrity.
Hello, friend.
Is he saying that
he's
to the food
the
or the waitress?
To the cheese.
In the country to buy Olive Garden's never-ending Pasta Bowl pass. Enjoy. He's been using his a lot.
I can't believe I get to eat like this every day. This is great.
This church minister and father of two loves a good deal. So he knew shelling out $100 for a never-ending Pasta Bowl pass would quickly pay for itself. Especially since his plan was to use his pasta pass every day, twice a day, for the whole 7 weeks of the promotion.
Oh, God. He's got his money's worth, absolutely.
Olive Garden General Manager Chris Lambert says never-ending Pasta Bowl meals usually cost $9.99. So far, Martin has had 95 of them. He knows because he saved all the receipts.
I would love to be the person that ate the most out of 1,000 people. You know, that'd be a good contest.
Why?
Because that means I got the most value out of the card than anybody did in the United States.
By Martin's count, he saved well over $1,000. Believe it or not, he says he hasn't gained any weight. What's even more impressive is he isn't sick of eating pasta yet.
Give me 7 more days, and I'll be ready maybe for Big Burger, pizza, I don't know.
Stephanie Ondo.
Okay, this is great. Now, a couple things.
Yeah, I've got some things here, too.
Father of two?
Yeah, where's
maybe,
the family?
Where's the family? He just eats there by himself every day? Twice? Kids, I'm gone. I'm going to Olive Garden. Eat whatever I've got here.
Daddy, can we have dinner?
We'd love to come to the Olive Garden, too, Papa.
Not happening.
Hello, friend.
More cheese on my pasta. Now, we know a guy who would have killed for one of these pasta passes, and he's maybe the biggest Olive Garden fan I've ever met, and it's Peter Schrager, and he's on the line. Schrags, your thoughts on this gentleman who is just abusing this pasta pass?
I mean, guys, you have a wall of fame of Canadians behind you. Can you make an honorary American? This guy is efficient, he's economical, and he's a genius. He got the very most out of this pass, the pasta pass, or whatever. Say it again, Jay. Pasta? How do you
say it? Yeah, that's right. I keep going back and forth between the Canadian and American.
You know what that report should have ended on? And what does this all-you-can-eat pasta pass get you? And just a shot of his big coiler in the toilet.
Yeah.
I have so many thoughts. First of all, table for one. That's I can totally empathize with that. That is my life. Table for one.
But you don't have children, Pete. You don't have children.
No, but did they say he's a pastor?
Yes.
A man of the Lord.
Man of the cloth.
Two meals a day, I'm in there. Love him. But I'll tell you what really bothered me. I only found that out because Gawker, the hipster website here in New York, posted it and did an article about it. And basically the author, who probably drinks $7 iced coffees from Stumptown Coffee and probably has written only 5 posts on Lena Dunham or what this episode of Homeland meant to him, this guy's calling this man in North Carolina, this wonderful American soul who deserves a place on Mount Rushmore, if you ask me, because it's genius spending. We're in a recession. This guy's making the most of it. Anyway, this hipster writer, I don't know who it was, he's calling him sad. He called him an idiot. I mean, really just disgusting writing, taking down a true American hero, a man who's saving money and keeping the Olive Garden in business.
I love it.
I love the interview with the owner. He's like, yeah, he's getting his money's worth. And he's just seething. Yeah.
Even the reporter, Pete, I thought the reporter was a little bit snide with her sort of line of questioning. Yeah, very, very condescending.
Patronizing. And I'll say,
Why would you want to win that contest? I don't know, because it's amazing?
Because it's an amazing honor, because there are few achievements like it, because, you know, the Pro Football Hall of Fame and maybe winning the Pulitzer is the only thing cooler than getting the most out of your pasta pass. I'll say this. I have a friend, Adam Weinberg, great guy. He's on Twitter. He's fantastic. He tweets me, he says, "That looks like a Tuscan village. That was a beautiful Olive Garden down there in North Carolina." I'm like, I know. It was the nicest Olive Garden I've ever seen. Just truly wonderful what it looked like. And this guy's getting his money's worth. And really, to me, we've got a lot of American heroes there. Some guy, I mean, Sully Sullinger landed the plane in the Hudson. He's an American hero.
Yeah,
so is this guy.
I agree. Put him right up with Captain Sully.
You know who hasn't seen the inside of that Olive Garden? His family.
No. How much do you think he's destroyed that Olive Garden toilet, though?
Oh, my God. And can you imagine if you're a waitress and he comes peeking his head in? Hello.
Here's a true story from high school. I'm not sure if I've told this before. We went to an all-you-can-eat buffet, this Chinese buffet in Peterborough at one of the hotels. Some of the guys we went with during the meal would go post-meal crunch.
Post-meal crunch or
during meal.
Yeah.
So, half-time meal.
Yeah. So they would clear the way for more food.
Yeah. Yeah. Get that all cleansed out.
There was a place where I grew up in Freehold, New Jersey called the Old Country Buffet. And some of this stuff was just, I don't know if it even exists anymore, but it was just food on food on food. And we would go, we'd wear sweatpants with elastic waistbands, and we would just eat bread rolls, we would eat baby back ribs, we would eat lo mein. I mean, it was disgusting food, but we would get our money's worth. And this gentleman down there in North Carolina, oh man, we got to have him on the podcast. He needs to be a guest.
He's going to be a national star.
Yeah. No more Bobby Mack. No more Bob McKenzie.
No more Bobby Mack. I appreciate what the Coyotes and the Thrashers are doing this week. But let's talk about this guy. This guy is a real legend.
So, Shregs, what do you want to rant on this week? You're just you saw the Patriots game the other day.
You were there.
I was there. It was awesome. That was a great game. You know, the funny thing was the weather, the elements seemed to be playing a role at 1 o'clock p.m. when it was snowing in a blizzard, but then things cleared up and Brady and Manning threw for 430 yards. It's not like Manning played bad. Mm-hmm. Brady is just in a different level right now, playing a different level. And I spoke with Julian Edelman afterwards, and I'm talking to Julian, and he's just saying, you know, Brady's so dialed in, I wouldn't want to play with any other quarterback. And then I see Tom Brady, and I'm like, you know, Edelman's having a great season. And he called him Minitron. I'd never heard him say that before. I loved it, Minitron. So you've got Megatron in Detroit, and you've got Julian Edelman, Minitron, in New England.
And
it's just an awesome game. And I think I'll be in New Jersey this weekend doing Steelers Jets, and then I think next week I'll be going out to Indianapolis for a little Colts Patriots. So AFC is loaded up. We have a lot of great NFC games on Fox, but I've been kind of doing the CBS AFC route, and it's been some great games.
And Shreg, so because it's in Jersey, it's like your backyard. Did the boys come out? They're like, "Oh, Shregs, you're our hero. Like, you made it, man. You're going to MetLife. You're there. You're on the sidelines.
You're going to Jersey Mike's, filling up on those subs.
You're heading to the Old Country Buffet before."
Guys, I do have one quick rant, and the answer is no. No one's going to Jet games anymore, so it doesn't matter. I mean, I could literally be hiking the ball at center. If see me. No one's watching it. But I'll say this. I have one quick rant, and it's every now and then a website or a publication will put out a Twitter must-follow list, right?
Right.
And this Twitter must-follow list is like, here's our 500 people you need to watch, here are 100 people, whatever. I'm not for or against them. I'm rarely on these lists, and the one time I was an honorable mention, and the website emailed me. It's like, "Hey, FYI, if you want to tweet this out," I said, "Screw you! Put me on the list. I don't want to be honorable mention. Give me an actual list here." But my gripe is about the people who are complaining about it and thus giving it more attention than it needs. You'll see this a lot. People saying, "Ugh, how could you forget X? How could you forget Y?" Yeah. And thus, it's this vicious cycle of this list that's pretty arbitrary, and then everyone tweeting about it and making it more, giving it more attention. It's like, you know, the Chevy guy or Alex from Target. Suddenly it becomes a thing because everyone's tweeting about it.
The person who actually is on it is like, "Oh, God, I'm on this list."
That's the best. I'm humbled. Retweet humbled. You're not that humbled. I'm going to do it. If I ever get nominated for one of these lists, I'm just going to respond, #blessed.
Shregs, I knew that those Twitter who to follow things, you know, the things that pop up on the side of your Twitter feed, I knew that was busted when this week at the very top of my who to follow list, Gian Gomeshi.
Wow, what an ironic twist that was. He must have been buzzing. He must have been trending that week.
Oh, God. Gian.
Gomeshi. Didn't know about Gomeshi until recently. Your Canadian listeners probably got a whole story on him last week. But
yeah.
Didn't know about Gomeshi. Did not know his name, and now I know his work. I'm appalled.
None of us knew about Gomeshi, really. We thought we knew. We thought we knew he was in a one-hit wonder band in the 90s that was terrible and then became a sort of smarmy radio host. It turns out he was beating the shit out of women left and right.
Wow. Yeah, those things are interesting on the side of that panel there. Usually it's people I'm not following, and there's a reason for that. But the lists that bother me, and again, I said my gripe is against people complaining, but the one thing that I will say about these lists, a lot of times they'll mention athletes, you know, like, you need to follow this player. And then you look at their Twitter feed, and it's like, had soup today. My charity did great work. Here's a photo of me with a sick kid. You know, like, it's not really that. You know, or it's, you need to follow this women's soccer player because she's going to be the big star. And then you look at her Twitter feed and it's like, love my teammates. So I don't know. My preference is a little different. I like sick, twisted individuals. I like you two. I like what Patrick Meldowney does when he argues with other people. I like that. That's always
Shrek's good. You're gonna love it. On this episode, we've got Twitter war theater. Email chain theater's gone. Twitter war theater's in, and
so
it's Lepore
better.
Against Muldowney.
Here's a great.
That's
follow.
A good one. And then what's the there was someone. Oh, who was? I don't know if it was Klatt, but someone. No, Richard Deitch called Cowboy.
Yeah.
Cowboy Jay.
I know. I love it. I
Twitter
love
war theater. Dyke. Take no prisoners.
No, who's a great follow? I just started following during the baseball playoffs. Batting stance guy.
Oh, great, great. And there's another one, Old Hoss Redburn. Do you know him? You ever heard of that
yeah,
one?
I see a lot of retweets of his.
Yeah, he just tweets things like he's an 1890s baseball player. Fantastic.
You know who's a good follow on Twitter? Peter Schrager. It's at PSCHRAGS. Go follow Pete.
Can we promote our new possible fixture of a segment on Fox Sports Live?
Oh, yeah. We darn right we can, Pete. Fridays, Fox Sports Live. This past Friday it appeared. I was blown away by it.
It was a pilot. It was a pilot. We were
that
a
was the pilot.
With the waters, but you could tell them what it is.
Schrager bombs. Okay?
Schrager bombs.
It's Schrager's quick takes on the National Football League.
Love it.
With quick little segments, cutting it up. Pete voicing it over himself with a giant explosion. It's incredible. I mean, it's beautiful production. It's first-rate television, and you're going to see it every Friday on Fox Sports Live on Fox Sports 1.
Love it, Peter.
I love that. And we're going to hopefully get the links and tweet them out, but I got to say, producer Tim really came through. He pushed this through. It might be a one-hit wonder. I'm not sure,
no,
but the
no.
feedback I got from the few people that actually saw it was great, and I hope it brings the same energy we get on this Jay and Dan pod.
Shregs, we love you, buddy. Have a great week, and we look forward to Schrager bombs on Friday.
All you can eat pasta, boy. And the best part about that video, if you go watch it back a couple of times, at the end of it, they just show a lone breadstick in a bowl.
I know, we saw it.
Fantastic.
See you, Cowboy.
That's
Cowboy. Thank you.
Love you.
Peter Schrager, and also Schrager. Listen to Peter Schrager's podcast, who his guest last week was Randy Moss.
Oh, Randy Moss. Yeah, really good. Really good. Randy Moss is the best. Like, one of the coolest cats ever. So nice.
He has the longest legs I've ever seen.
Randy Moss, to me, they are grooming him to be a panelist on the NFL on Fox show, the big hit Sunday show with Jimmy,
so
Terry,
good.
Strahan. Just a couple of thoughts. Who goes, who leaves when Moss comes in? Who goes?
Well, whoever wants to just step away and not
nope,
do it anymore.
Someone has to die.
I don't think there's enough chairs at that desk.
Someone has to die. There's already one too many. They sandwiched Strahan in there. So who
there's
dies?
There's room. Put a guy on the end.
Terry might die of shingles someday.
Have you ever had shingles?
No, I don't want to. Really?
Yeah. It feels like someone's jabbing a syringe into your back.
That's
I had
what he
it in
says in his shingles commercial.
Oh, God.
And he's on his ranch and... I want to know, is that really Terry's ranch that they shot?
I haven't seen this commercial.
In Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Shregs, should we give Taggart a quick call? Oh, you know what? Let's save that for next time.
Okay.
Yeah, let's save that for next
What's
time.
That?
He might have some.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do that. We'll do that next time.
Because
I feel like we're
He's ready.
We're pretty over here.
And we've already got people mad at us.
While you're calling him, Jim, can I just ask you very quickly, you've seen... instead of a story this week, I just want to ask you, you've seen an episode of this Foo Fighters Sonic Highways show on HBO.
Yeah, it's great.
Just your thoughts overall on this thing.
totally in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. I love that Dave Grohl goes to different cities and looks at the historical background of, you know, rock and roll. And he goes back. He goes way back, you know, in the history. It's not just, you know, current rock. It's where the roots all came from and all that stuff. I've only seen the first two episodes. I didn't see the Nashville one yet, but I can't wait to see it.
Like, the Chicago one was so good. He's a really good, that and the Sound City doc that he did.
Yeah, it's great.
He's an excellent director and storyteller.
Yeah,
he tells it in a really nice way. The only issue that we both have with this show is that, so he spends the whole show talking about the history of the city and the history of the studio he's at, and then it ends with a song that he's written there kind of about the city and about his experience.
And the characters that he's met there. And all.
It's a bit forced. And then they do a performance.
Oh, it makes me cringe. I want to cringe during the song.
Yeah. But I will say this. The best part is, once you know that performance is coming, you can just shut it off. You can just shut that off.
I have too much respect for the guy. I'm going to watch it anyways.
Yeah. You know, it's sensational.
And, you know, it's great. He's got Butch Vig there producing the stuff. The guy is one of the greatest ever, in my opinion. Phenomenal producer. And it was great. Like, the one in Chicago, he had Steve Albini. You know, it's just amazing.
Like, so from your perspective, so for people that don't know, very quickly, Steve Albini, kind of a legendary indie rock producer who sort of does things his own way. He's very cantankerous and sort of abrasive guy, but famous. But the thing that I took away from it were two things. Number one, he said several times he's had to play, like, he's a card player. He loves to play cards. Makes sense. He's like a brilliant guy. He's had to play cards and win money at cards certain months to keep the studio going and pay his staff.
Yeah, crazy.
And that now there was a time, he said, probably when he produced In Utero for Nirvana, when he had a ton of cash, and now it's like, it seems like he's just month to month to keep that place open, which is really sad because it's like he's like a legendary producer.
And, you know, he could have opted for points on that.
Right. That's the other thing.
And he said, no, you know, I want to work like a carpenter or somebody like that. You hire him to do a job. You're going to build the house. You pay him to build the house. The house is built. Thank you very much. Why should you be paying the guy who built your house his whole life because your house is still standing?
Yeah.
I mean, I get that. I respect that. But
he's given up a lot of dough.
That's a lot. Yeah, man.
Like In Utero, all those album sales, he would have had a cut of that, and he just gave that up.
I mean, they paid him a boatload of cash up front.
Right, right.
Like a truckload of money.
Yeah.
But still, in the long run, he wouldn't be playing cards to keep his studio.
Well, this is the thing. The other thing that amazed me in the Nashville one, this gives nothing away, but very quickly, Dolly Parton just blew my mind. She talked about how she obviously wrote I Will Always Love You. She wrote that song. And she said that back in the 70s, just before Elvis died, he wanted to cover it. He wanted to do a version of it. So the Colonel came to her and said, okay, we want to do your song, but you got to give us some points on this. You got to give us a percentage of the sales. That's how it works with Elvis. He does one of your songs, you give us a little bit.
You got to give him a chunk.
Got to give him a chunk of it. And Dolly said no.
It's unbelievable.
Dolly turned down Elvis. And then she says, but then Whitney did it, and that turned out pretty good for me. I'm like,
No, no kidding, right?
Like crazy, the ball she has.
And I believe she wrote it for Porter Wagner.
She did, about Porter Wagner.
About Porter.
Yeah, yeah.
Whom I met just before he passed away. I worked with him in the studio, actually, with Marty Stewart, who was just out here.
Yeah.
Phenomenal, phenomenal experience.
That's pretty cool.
Working with Porter Wagner.
Yeah. And so Dolly makes an appearance, sorry to cut you off.
She's through the whole Nashville episode.
How's she looking?
Pretty good. Yeah, I mean, there's tons of surgery, but she's lit perfectly. And the breasts are still spectacular. Now, those are fake now, for sure. Because she had the beautiful, beautiful tits, like, when she was growing up. Like, we all know it, right? Like, even you see some old shots of her at the Grand Ole Opry when she was starting out. Just stunning. God, she was so beautiful.
I was baffled how she could stand up.
Oh, they were so massive, but perfect.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you guys remember, she lost a bunch of weight in the 80s. She lost a ton of weight, and she lost her boobs. And so, I mean, I don't know for sure, but she had to have had a boob job because they're back. Somehow, they're back.
Islands in the streams. Oh. Yeah. That is what we are.
What a song. That was
Do you know what studio they were at? I haven't, because I haven't seen the Nashville one.
Yes,
yes. Was it Blackbird or someplace they were at?
It might have been Blackbird. Yeah, yeah. It might have been that one. Cool. You'll love it. You'll love that episode. Yeah, anyway, that was fun. Is Taggart on the line?
Another HBO show, Olive Kittredge. It was a four-part miniseries. Highly recommend it.
So they've played the first two parts, or the whole thing has been played?
It was Sunday, Monday.
It's over. I hope. I think I set it to tape. I haven't watched it on the DVR. I'm going to get used to it.
Just unreal acting in that.
Wow. Okay. I got to
check
this
out. And Bill Murray makes an appearance out of nowhere.
And so Frances McDormand, who won an Oscar for Fargo, and she's an amazing actress. She wrote and directed it.
Well,
I think it's based on books, and she, or a play, you're right, and she bought the rights to it. Like, that's her money she put up to do it.
So good.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. I think I told you, she was the first celeb I saw down here, her and whatever Coen brother she's married to. And it didn't look like they were getting along that well. Hey, I just remember he didn't hold the door for her wherever we were at. He just opened the door and walked out.
Can we start a new segment when we get around to it?
Email Chain Theater. Yeah.
No.
Email Chain Theater.
No.
Check your inbox.
Can we get an explosion?
I got another tweet about that just now.
I want to start
Resurrect it.
YouTube Comment Theater.
Okay.
Because Magic, Olivia Newton-John song, appears in that show being played by a lounge singer. So I looked it up and I listened. And great song. So one of the top comment on this Olivia Newton-John song is, great song, she's from Australia, cut her a little slack. So I'm like, hey, that guy's too. And sometimes YouTube comments make my night.
Yeah.
Because they're just so good.
Well, why don't we do this? For those of you who like to watch the podcast on YouTube, start sending put some more comments on YouTube for our shows, and we'll read some of the best ones.
I forgot to look.
They are pretty good now.
They're already good. Yeah, I love them.
The quantity is not huge, but the quality is there.
Yeah. Last week's podcast, someone sent me a tweet, or maybe it was a post on YouTube, that I had a booger issue for like a minute.
Yeah, you had a bug problem.
I don't know if I was picking it or if it was hanging out.
It's probably hanging out like Neil Young in The Last Waltz. Hey, Taggart.
Do you guys mind if I just add one footnote to the Dolly Parton?
Yeah.
I Will Always Love You, the Whitney Houston version.
Right.
My good friend Dave Reitzis recorded that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was in the studio, and the mix that everybody heard was the rough mix that they did the day she sang the song. They did it at Ocean Way, and they sent the song to Clive Davis, and he was like, oh my God, this is it. This is the mix. This is everything.
Don't need to do it. So really, what do you mean? Like, they were just kind of doing a demo? They were trying to figure it out?
Yeah, they spent some time with her working out the song. She made it through. She sang it. They got the vocals the way they wanted it, and they sent the song off to Clive Davis for him to hear it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were going to put it in the movie and all that stuff. And when Clive heard it, he was like, this is spectacular. Don't change anything. And they're like, well, you know, we're going to mix it and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, no, this is it. You're done.
Amazing.
Like that's it.
That's amazing.
It's like Bruce Springsteen's entire Nebraska album.
That was all demos, right?
Yeah, he shot it, or he recorded it in like a room with just him and an
like
eight-track or
four-track or something.
Yeah.
And then he brought it. They tried to do it with the band. They said, you know what? We're sticking with
that. Yeah, sticking with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Taggart, did that ever happen to you in a recording studio? You're working on demos, and you're like, ah, it, we'll go with the demos. Let's all head out to the bar.
I wish. I mean, it did happen sometimes, and sometimes it's really bad because, like, the A&R guy, like, loved the demo, and, like, you can never get that magic that he thought he heard, which you don't at all. Like, the band's like, it's just a demo and it's terrible, but there's an energy or a feeling that is not there, obviously, from the first, you know, little demo. So there's good and bad things in those, and there are sometimes where you can't recapture a song, so you re-record it and try, but then you just keep the original version. That's happened a few times for sure.
Hey, Jeremy, very quickly, and I hope it's okay if I ask you about this. I saw someone had included me on a tweet where they were asking you about seeing you on Woodstock 99. Was first of all, I had no idea you guys played that. That's amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience? And was that the one that were basically things were burning down?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
We played that that afternoon before it got He played the Sunday afternoon before it got crazy. So, yeah, we went down there. It was, you know, being a student of the 60s myself, just, you know, appreciating the first one so much. And the 94 Woodstock had happened, so it was kind of the thrill was gone a little bit for me, but it was insane the amount of people. You know, you drive in there and you're just kind of stuck backstage because there's like 200,000 people out there, and then it's like a zoo, and everything is just kind of quarantined back there. So we were just hanging out. It was like a just so many bands backstage, and it was like the backstage itself was like a zoo. You know.
Must have been a lot of interesting aromas.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, mostly just hammered people and women kind of coming and going. But you know, it was actually just kind of depressing. I went out and saw, like, Rage from Sidestage. I thought they were awesome. I saw a bit of Metallica, and I went out front a little bit for Metallica, and I was so, like, afraid from the amount of people that I just ran back, and I was like, I literally was only out in that crowd for about 5 minutes of that whole weekend, and it was just too much and too dense for me to deal with. So I went back, and when we played, it was just so many people, and like, you're so stuck. There was nothing really exciting other than just, you know, the madness. And we left just in time. The Peppers were going to go on, and that's when all the shit hit the fan, I guess. You know, right. People started getting sick of stuff.
Yeah, big events like that, it's great to say you were there, but then you look back, you're like, man, it was just a pain in the ass.
Totally, and it's funny because that's what a lot of the artists said about the first Woodstock, the one who played it. Like, I don't remember anything being cool about that whatsoever other than it being a big pain in the ass to get in and out, you know? So it's weird.
That's how I justify not leaving my house most times. I'm like, I can go to this Kings game. I got to drive there, find parking. Ugh.
Parking's the ultimate LA excuse.
You guys are working. You guys had some Canadian slangs going on there, did you?
No, we're saving that for next week.
Oh, you sons of guns. I got some good ones.
Oh, yeah. We're going to save that for next week. Sorry to do that to you.
Don't worry, but I'll be...
Will you be ready for it?
I was actually prepared for Mikey Botticelli.
I know. Botticelli.
You waited for half an hour.
Hey, Tags, we've got a female musician entered into the Canadian Wall of Fame, Joni Mitchell, making the wall.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Nice.
Are you a fan? Like, we were kind of saying, I don't know much of her music. I feel kind of bad about that.
The cool thing about her is, and I was just joking with the Botticelli. I know it's Botticello, Mike. I don't want to be that guy.
Thanks, Mike. I get it all the
guy
time.
For so long, and I just thought it's Mikey Botticelli. Sounds like a guy I liked in high school.
Sounds like a character on Happy Days, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. But Joni Mitchell, her beginnings are what's cool. The coolest thing about her is just kind of how she congregated in Laurel Canyon there with CSNY and David Geffen, and getting involved in the Geffen Records group, and how those artists got together. And she was more of a kind of like a jazz artist as opposed to a rock pop artist. So the music that she made was really always pushing the envelope, and she always had insane musicians. Like, she had like Jaco Pastorius on bass, and you know, always would have like Pat Metheny on guitar, and always put together incredible bands. So she was always kind of ahead of the curve on that. I respect her for tons of reasons.
She's so low key now, though, mm-hmm. too. Like, she barely does interviews. She's doing it the right way.
I think she's kind of bummed out and bitter on the scene because she's really a true kind of visionary, and it's like what she sees as music and art just isn't happening on the mainstream. So that's probably why she could give a shit about it. You know?
Well, and you're right. And like Crosby and Neil Young arguing about whether they're going to go out for their 25th reunion tour.
Yeah.
She never does that stuff. She just doesn't do it. She doesn't even tour.
No, I don't know. She's an incredible artist, painter as well. So she who knows what, I don't know what she really. She probably just lives a really simple life, and hopefully she has enough means to get by and comfortably, because you don't hear her really complain about much.
How was Halloween for you, Tagger? Did you get any full-size chocolate bars?
I did. We did. We went to a little a fancy house, I guess you could say. They had some pretty fancy stuff.
Was it Bob McKenzie's cottage?
I know. What's up with that secret about that place? Has anybody been there?
Bobby was just on.
I think he's had the hockey guys up there at least maybe once.
Has Duffy been up there?
I think maybe once he's been up there. Apparently, it's quite spectacular. Because
as
he said,
sworn to secrecy. Is it like a Camp David?
Well, this is it because Toolsy is so anti cottage because of all the used furniture. But he said it's like designer stuff in there.
Yeah, he says it's a house. It's not a cottage. It's a house.
And is that where he lives most of the time? Because he shuts things down there?
I think he shuts it down. I think he's there like just the summer months. But Bobby has a sweet gig. He works all the hockey season. But July and August, I mean, after the draft is over, good luck getting a hold of Bobby, man. That's not f***ing happening.
Bobby's tweeting pictures from his dock.
He always tweets pictures of him with like a glass of wine in the hand on the dock, sun setting.
And hey, he gives like a wine recommendation. This is a good bottle for $9.
I love that.
That is the equivalent to the face rub in hockey. That's what that is. To all the other guys that are in media, like this, guys. That's great. Simmons?
Exactly.
Oh, that's hilarious.
How's your doc while you're f***ing watching practice?
Jeremy Taggart, as always, we thank you, my friend.
Hey, Taggart, sorry you prepared for this week, but next week you'll be doubly prepared for Mike Botticelli's stuff.
Oh, and how?
Classic
just wait.
Botticelli.
How's the Taggart and Torrens taking over Q coming?
Oh yeah, how is that coming along?
I've heard of, there's been a minor, slight swell, but I think it's still you can't really talk about anything without it going back to Guy Smiley.
Yeah.
And, you know, I, when it comes to that, it's just like nobody really. I was like, oh yeah, that's just. Leave it for now.
Well, I noticed too, and Jeremy, I'm sure you noticed this too, Norm Macdonald is like on a Twitter campaign again
to host Q.
Yeah. Oh, he is? Well,
yes.
Because he was like, come on down, bro, don't worry about it. No, it's all good initially, right?
Oh, yeah. Like because he was on that campaign to host the Late Late Show.
He's looking for a gig.
He is. He's open about the fact that he would like a gig like that.
Why don't you guys get him for Fox Sports? He loves talking about sports.
Well,
and gambling.
We've talked to him about coming on the pod. It hasn't happened yet, but I know it'll happen down the road. But I agree. To me, that show he did on Comedy Central, that sports show with Norm Macdonald, it should have worked. They gave it like 10 episodes. They didn't even give it enough time to find its
feet. I think he really cares about it. Like, I think he would want it to be informative, not just like screwing around.
I think if it was about gambling, he would be 100% committed. Because that man would really.
And you know what? I mean,
gambling.
Let's face it. Like, that's what kind of runs the sports world, and in America, the radio, it's everywhere. Why wouldn't you try and cross those lines?
We already do it on our show now.
Who wouldn't listen to a Norm Macdonald daily radio show about sports betting? I would. I'd love it.
Okay, Taggart, we got to run.
Okay. See you, buddy.
Bye.
Take care.
Jeremy Taggart, we thank him. We thank Peter Schrager. We thank Bob McKenzie.
Yes. We thank Vader. Vader's been holding that camera. Look at those muscles, just holding it. He's excited. Engineer Jim, thank you so much. Amazing intro again. Great to talk. I love to sit down and watch that Dave Grohl show with you and just like, that'd be so much fun.
That'd be great.
So Wednesday we're all getting together at the Rainbow on Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah.
This is going to be incredible. So we'll talk about that next week. I can't wait for that. I hope Lemmy from Motorhead is there.
I hope he's there too. And Ron Jeremy.
Ron Jeremy, apparently we got some pictures. Was in Lethbridge last week doing like a bar appearance.
What?
Really?
Oh, yeah, I did say that.
Send him on.
Oh, man. We got to get him on the show.
Yes,
Mike, thank you so much for all your hard work this week.
Patrick, great haircut.
Patrick, we barely touched about Patrick's Brad Pitt and Fury haircut.
We thank our sponsor, DraftKings. Make sure you go to DraftKings.com. Use the promo code JDP with your first deposit. Get entry into the Sniper for free. Sniper's one-day fantasy hockey for cash.
And Slutty and Frank, get on it now. Happy Halloween.
Elvis has just left the building.
They're going home.
Ah!
Yeah.